Recording what our conversation is about. I started to say, the common, you've heard this before, and I've said it maybe in past about whenever there's a challenge, we always ask ourselves, well, what is God trying to tell me, or what lesson should I learn? You ever heard that? People will say, well, God is trying to teach me something.
I always say God is trying to teach you something.
Right.
I've already learned all my lessons.
Yes. So. The common response was, okay, God, I think I've learned enough. We just
stop learning.
Can I graduate finally, or that's usually the adage that people use, or the idea when they go through suffering. Okay, God's trying to tell me something, or God's trying to teach me something, or we'll see what he has in mind someday. All those kinds of, I guess, excuses.
It's all for the good of God.
Romans
8:28.
Right. Right. He's working out his perfect plan. But that's exactly it, guys. It's come to me that suffering has a very, very clear purpose in our lives. And the passage that I shared with you is one that keeps coming back to me all the time. Romans 8:18 through 20. You see there is a definite purpose in the sufferings, or what we would see as challenges, or all kinds of things that oppose us, whatever it might be, disease, government, friends, work, whatever. There is in God's mind something that he is after, something that he wants to fulfill. And if you look at that verse, it seems to me it's very clear. It's all about unveiling, all about showing something in us that we didn't know was there, perhaps. And that something is, according to that scripture, glory. That the sufferings of this current era do not deserve the glory about to be revealed in the sons of God, or of the sons of God. Anyone here not believe they are a son or daughter of God?
No way. Yes.
If we at all see ourselves, and we should, as sons and daughters of God, then we fit into this purpose, or into this statement, this declaration of God. God is not trying to teach us anything. He's not trying to show us anything other than he's trying to unveil us. Now, what is he trying to unveil? Now, again, everything is about God's working. It's not about us. There was, years ago, there was a statement written called the Westminster Confession. Did any of you good Presbyterians remember that?
Yes, yes.
And it was all about the intention of man to glorify God. I don't have the confession in front of me here, but essentially it's what it means to glorify God. And if you remember that confession, or if you've read it at some point, it really is all about performance, our performance, the ways that we are to glorify God through obedience, through service, through all the ways that we understand he requires things of us. But is it our responsibility?
No,
In other words, is it up to us?
No, I think
God's glory be seen.
Going back to your original question, what's God trying to reveal in us? He's trying to reveal more of him. And as we accept this concept of Christ in me, then there is no performance. We just, if we are trying to live as Christ, then our actions would just, I mean, it becomes more natural. So there's no perform, there would be no performance. It would just be who we are. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Do we need to worry about whether at any one point we are doing our part?
No. That takes away the anxiousness and the anxiety and all that.
Again, it falls back into our performance.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if you, I think you would agree with me. I don't think I can do a very good job of myself trying to glorify God.
I did a much better job of it when I was single.
Yeah, even when I was under that belief system that, I mean, I refused to put like a fish on my car because of the way I drove.
You know, what a great statement, because how many cars do you see with a little fish or some sort of Christian emblem on it that are just driving like idiots?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, the ones that say honk if you belong Jesus and she did and just give us a finger to you. But I don't think I can do a very good job of it if it was up to me. I'm going to leave it up to God. And I'm going to let him work through any given circumstance, any given conflict, suffering, whatever it might be. I'm going to rest it. Okay. God, do what you do. And let him disclose or manifest himself in the way that he chooses.
Dennis, is there something in our makeup that kind of fights that a little bit and works against that? What is it in the mental attitude that it seems to me, with me anyway, it kind of fights and works against that attitude?
One answer possibly, Jerry, is that we still resort back to those old tapes, the independent self. I can do it. I will do it my way.
Yeah.
And it is the old self for self. You know, Scott wrote about that this week as well. My way. I don't know that I could understand exactly what he was driving at, but the point is we think we can do it our way. And we mess it up. That's the old tape. It's still in us, Jerry.
We had a friend used to say my way or the highway. You know?
<You're right. laughs> I used to work for a person who, that was the way it was. Very, very predominant church leader, pastor. Yep.
Well, you know, we're trying to break X number of years of a different teaching. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, as you know, Dennis, I came to Christ in my 40s. Mm-hmm. And so for me, well, and even before then, through Christian Science, and prior to that, being raised in the Methodist Church, it was all performance. Mm-hmm. And when you look at our everyday life, everything we do is based on performance. Mm-hmm. Whether you're going to school, you're in a job, trying to please mom and dad, whatever, everything is performance. And then all of a sudden to come along with this paradigm of God doesn't require performance. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's not an easy habit to break.
Yeah.
Or it's not an easy concept to wrap your head around.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
If everything in our religious training has been about trying to be better, our religious training has always been you fall short, but you can measure up if you do this or that. This is what God expects.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That kind of messes with my mind, like Fulton also, because like having my son perform, people at work,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, just I start thinking about that, and then I don't know how to make the two, bridge the gap between the two when I'm trying to train my son to do something.
Right.
And he mm-hmm. has to perform to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I still love him, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's a hard to bridge that.
Does God, okay, there was a whole period of time, and that's recorded for us in the Old Testament, in which it was all about performance. Mm-hmm. But now we live in a period where that is not the paradigm. God is not expecting us to perform. It's a matter of letting him, as we go back to that beautiful statement of Mary, let it be as you have said. God, you do it. Mm-hmm. It's not me, it's you. I resigned to let go and let God. That probably is one of the most beautiful statements that someone ever made. But it's hard. It's hard when you've been trained in that old paradigm in the Old Testament.
Yep.
Now, how do you do that with your son or daughter? You expect them to perform? Yeah, it's a fine line, Dave. I go back to, as God works with us, he reminds us of who we are. And so we continually speak into our friends, our relatives, our children. This is who God has created you to be. Are you fulfilling who you really are? Are you becoming the person that God has designed you to be? And that's tricky because it's not performance, it's allowing or following or being in sync or being in harmony with God, with how you're made, your heart, all of those things. I'm so thankful that we have Jesus as a model, mm-hmm. in how this was done. And if you begin to read, as I have recently just been poring over John 17, his prayer, you can see this dynamic. He glorified the Father, and the Father was glorified in him through the fact that he continued to stay in the Father and followed all that God has had placed on his heart. And the word is, what you commissioned me to do. What are we feeling commissioned to do? Now, again, you have to be careful. It's not a performance. Think about Jesus. What was he commissioned to do? Was it performance? Well, in certain ways, he did conduct himself. He acted in certain ways. But all of that was in sync with what he felt the Father's commission on his heart was to do. Heal the sick. Deliver people from oppression. Heal the brokenhearted.
Also, Jesus was very aware of when God was asking him to walk away from a situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, after he healed Peter's mother, the next day, after he had healed a bunch of other people, he was led to leave and go someplace else, even though there were still people there wanting to be healed.
Right.
So we have to be aware of when we have done what God has asked us to do and it's time to move on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very easy, particularly when you can't let go of the performance aspect. It's very easy to say, well, that can't be God telling me to leave now because there's still work to be done here.
Yeah, right.
And when in fact, it is time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if we're focused on performance, we can very easily miss when God is telling us to move on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In other words, David, we live in that complete harmony with where we see Father. That's what Jesus, that's what he practiced. He didn't see the Father in hanging around doing more work in that situation. He saw the Father leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we operate the same way. What do we see the Father doing?
Well, and we have to also understand that even though Jesus left, does that mean the Father quit working there?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Okay. It's just that what he wanted Jesus to do was done.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we move on, it does not indicate that God is no longer moving there or mm-hmm. working there. Mm-hmm. It's just that we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, was Jesus himself going through an unveiling process? We're talking about when he was here in the flesh.
Yeah.
What kind of things did he endure or even do that you realize that was his unveiling?
Never really thought about it that way. You always think, well, part of the problem in answering that question is for so long we were taught Jesus is God.
Mm-hmm.
So if Jesus is God, why is there any unveiling necessary?
Yeah.
The unveiling is on our part.
Yeah.
Never looked at it from the aspect of was Jesus being unveiled.
Mm-hmm. Hebrews 2:10 says that Christ himself was being perfected. What does that mean? So that he could produce many sons, that many sons would come to glory.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because again, Jesus being in the flesh, he had all the temptations, and more so than we do.
Mm-hmm.
He had free choice.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was as human as we are, yeah, perhaps each step, each situation he found himself in was going to challenge him with free will.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other challenges that everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps then each situation he found himself in was a unveiling,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Showing more of God.
Mm-hmm. What comes to your mind as an illustration of Jesus showing the Father, showing or manifesting the Father? What were this kinds of circumstances or situations in his life? Any come to mind for you that
going into towns that Jews normally wouldn't go into?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
How was that showing the Father?
Showing him that God accepts everyone.
Okay.
That God wants to be revealed in everyone's life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. What about when he stumbled and fell under trying to carry the weight of the cross? Did that reveal the Father?
I would think so, in that, again, he was having to draw on the Father's strength to get back up,
mm-hmm.
and to continue on.
Mm-hmm. You can just go down the line. He's being whipped and flogged, and he's hung on a cross. And what does he say? Father, forgive them. Has anyone been beaten up unfairly recently and turned around and said, you don't understand what you're doing, I forgive you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I sent you a little statement about that, you know, that,
yeah.
You know, somebody was just treating me really bad in a retail situation, and I just, my natural instinct, you know, me is to flash back, and I got a pretty quick mind, you know, but instead, bless them, you know, uh-huh. and find some way to bless them and let them move on, and they did, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay. Yeah.
You said something specifically to him?
I can't remember exactly. It was something, you know, that calmed them down nice and, you know, and complimented them or something, you know, like that.
Yeah. It wasn't you, blanky blank.
yeah. Which I, you know, I can dress somebody down better than the other guy, probably, you know. So, yeah. It, you know, and it's just a conversation to have. Jesus, what are we up to today? And, you know, mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. you know, and then let's find out what this adventure is today.
Yeah.
To me, it's kind of simple, even though it's complex as we talk here, you know.
Yeah.
Just you know, relax in him. You know, he is me. Yeah. You know, I am him.
Life is full of pressures.
Yeah.
Life is full of challenges, sufferings. It's full of things. And we get the idea, why do I have to endure this? Why, this isn't fair. What, God, why are you doing this? We have all kinds of gyrations that we go through. But at the end of the day, we come back to and realize, wait a minute, Father, what are you trying to do here? You're trying to show yourself.
You know, Dennis, sometimes out on freeway driving, you know, when someone cuts in front of you and they're changing lanes, you know, mm-hmm. my knee-jerk reaction is not to bless that guy. You know, I
know, Jerry.
My brain is kind of on fire for a little while and I settled down, sure. but those guys really irritate me.
Sure.
Me and, too, Jerry. That's why I don't have a fish.
Well, you guys, come on down to Southern California. Oh. 12 lanes of freeway, and I'm getting used to it. I don't flip them off or jam the brakes on, you know. It's just flow with it. Go with the flow at 85 miles an hour. Get in the left lane and, you know, get out of the...
Yeah, let them go.
Fortunately, I've got a car that, you know, was designed for the Autobahn at 160, you know, 150.
Somebody once told me if you drive the speed limit in Los Angeles, you're actually going backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And people told me it's going to take you about 6 months or a year to really get used to it. Well, I think I'm getting in the flow. but that's off point, you know, that it really is Jesus all the time in us. And, and you know, it just, you know, I just like, you know, my natural reaction is if I let myself be me, just let him have it. But
all right.
You know, even in that, Jesus lost his temper a time or two, you know, but by and large, he did not. He was blessing and bringing blessing upon others just by his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got angry, and a lot of people have trouble with that. A lot of people get a knee-jerk reaction. Well, what kind of person gets angry and thrashes around in the temple and drives people out? Well, was that at all in any way revealing God, the Father?
Yeah.
I mean, there was, when you think about it, those circumstances, there was absolute gross hypocrisy going on in the name of religion, in the name of God. And it really hurt Jesus that the Father's name was so profaned that the whole point of demonstrating honoring God and worshiping God was turned into a marketplace. I mean, that he couldn't handle it.
I remember several years ago, we went through that book, Jesus Mean and Wild.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another story there where he actually healed someone. And then I forget exactly what word was used in the Bible, something like, but he sternly warned him not to sin again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the actual Greek interpretation is more like he chewed his butt. I mean, he really got angry with the guy in his warning. Mm-hmm. So whatever he was healed of, there was something serious going on that a very strong rebuke was in order. So, yeah, there are several instances in the Bible where Jesus gets pretty doggone cranky with people.
Yeah. Is this at all have to do with unveiling the Father, unveiling of himself?
I would think so, because again, I think it's showing how much God detests sin, unrighteous actions, and that, you know, he's very serious about not liking a lot of what we do.
No.
Hey guys, I'm reminded Jesus was on the Mount of Olives and
you know, the teacher probably learns more than the students, you know.
Yes.
And he's saying love, joy, peace, understanding, long suffering. Mm-hmm. You know, he's teaching that to people. I don't know if I'm having trouble with the audio here, but I think you're hearing me.
Oh, yeah. We're getting it. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I watch my son with his son, and hands down, my son is being a much better father than I was. He is very patient with my grandson, Lane. But you can also see there are times where Lane will push back and it requires a more firm hand, mm-hmm, or a more firm approach. And sometimes Sean starts to get a little angry with him. Mm-hmm. Again, the purpose is trying to get the correct idea across to my grandson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we can see God in how parents react to their kids, and that he's very patient with us, but at times it takes something a little more harsh to get our attention.
Yeah.
Wish my son was on here right now. He could tell you stories like that.
Yeah. It's also the, you know, from a child's perspective, because there was a story, you know, a friend of mine, like her toddler just kept wanting to run down to the lake, and she kept having to hold him back, and he just started to pitch a tantrum, and it was so fierce that she just had to hold him like this, because he could see the water. He could see that that was fun. That was, he wanted that. And she knew better and was holding him because she loved him and wanted to protect him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just always try and think of that, you know, like, that's
beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah.
But I was going to ask you, Dennis, I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead. Yeah.
But just thinking about, you know, how you were talking about unveiling, Jesus unveiling, because, you know, when he was at the Last Supper, or he hosted the Last Supper, and he knelt and washed the feet of every disciple. And I never got this until like I was a grown adult, and, you know, even though I'd read it 100 times, but they were, I think that was so revealing of who God is, because it wasn't comfortable for them. It wasn't like it's nice. They were so freaked out by it. It was uncomfortable. It was not politically correct. It was humiliating. They didn't like seeing Jesus in that role. And that was one of his, you know, when you gather the people around you and you know your time on earth is just a matter of days, you want to impart the most important thing to those people. And that's, I just love that. That's what he chose to do. That's what he chose to leave them with.
That,
I don't know.
That beautiful. You think about it. Was that the Father being disclosed? That the unveiling of Jesus, he was showing the Father in almost condescending himself, going beneath their expectation, and totally throwing their whole, threw them off. Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, Dennis.
Yeah.
You know, back to the email you sent out. It says, God says that the sufferings or the conditions we're in today or have been in past, the sufferings of the current era do not deserve the glory about what to be revealed. Mm-hmm. And creation is waiting the unveiling of the sons of God, us.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the current situation kind of petty, and anything that I've got, or Julie and I've gone through in the last 2 years, particularly, it's so what, you know? let's find this glory thing out,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, small potatoes, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, I just throw that in, you know.
Yeah, and it was not small potatoes. You were near death from my.
I was one heartbeat away from death in the ventilator, and that seems like ancient history today.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just. Oh, yeah. All I have to do is learn to walk again, and I'll be fine.
Wow. So true.
I can limp, but yeah. I'm supposed to use a cane, and that'll go away.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah.
What he's saying, I believe what he's saying there, this is God through the mouth of Paul saying that, wow, if we understood the glory. In other words, what is glory? Glory is expressing God. Man is the glory of God. Man is the expression. We've been talking about that. We are in God, God in us, Christ as Christ, and all of it's about revealing God. And when we think about all that means, what is suffering? Wow, it's not about the suffering. It's how great it is. Nothing compares. Nothing.
And how we've come out the other end of that today, this conversation, it's just remarkable. You know, God has used that in me and Julie to open my eyes up. Mm-hmm. It ain't all that bad.
I mean,
in terms of future issues that are inevitably going to happen. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've been pondering this whole subject of what is the glory. And I'm finding that it would take volumes. It would take months for a conversation to even begin to understand the dimension. What it is, how it happens, what is the glory of God? John 17, it just is so full of that whole idea. Father, glorify yourself in me as I glorify you, and I share this glory with those you have given me. And who are that? Who are those? Those are the disciples.
Well, do you think that instead of seeing suffering as what is God trying to teach me,
right?
Should we be looking at suffering as how is God being glorified?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yes.
And I have to back. I have to back down from a statement that I've been using. It's not about trying to see through. There is some aspect of it, but seeing as God sees, I mean, that helps. But the real end point is, how is this glorifying God? How is my reaction? How is my enduring? How is this suffering bringing out the unveiling of God's glory in me?
Well, I can see it in Arnold.
Yes.
Arnold has gone through. And
yeah.
What Arnold was 5 years ago is compared to now. Look at the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold, thank I remember you down at the airport when we used to have those meetings down there, and that was before you went through all this health problems. You were probably a different person then, and definitely than you are now. So that's revealing God right there, what works in Arnold, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if you caught that, Arnold. I mean, your internet might have broken up, but do you see yourself? as different from when we first met down there at the airport with it as a
curious thing? You know, executive managing a lot of stuff, and you know, and then retirement, mm-hmm. moving to Las Cruces, and you know, motorcycle guy on one side, and you know, Harley, and the other side is, you know, now getting settled. And the stuff that's happened in those 2 years lately has brought me to. Has brought Jesus and me to a new place, you know, uh-huh. me, us. You know? Uh-huh. Yeah. I didn't realize he was there all the time. Yeah. He was with me. He was me.
Yeah. That's the point, isn't it? We don't even know that.
Yeah.
And it takes a good crisis for us to be able to see it. I'm sorry. That's sometimes the only way we are able to see it. That's why I love that statement. I had to research who actually said it. And it wasn't Rahm Emanuel that said it. It was Churchill. And never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm wondering if how he came about that. Did he understand this from God's perspective, or you know, what was his philosophy in coming up with that statement? But how true it is. There's not a crisis. No, go ahead.
I was wondering what it means in that verse, the Romans 8:18 through 20, what mm-hmm. the creation is.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What is, because in it's he's talking about the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage. Mm-hmm. The creation was subjected to frustration.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What is he referring to?
Well, when you think about creation before Adam ate the apple,
mm-hmm.
what was the state of creation, all of creation, animals, life? Peace. Go ahead.
Peace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
There was... How do they say it? There wasn't disturbance in the force.
Yeah, that's a better way.
She loves Star Wars references.
I speak that language.
Yeah. But after he ate the apple, what a disturbance. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. The death came in. Degeneration came in. Everything was now fighting to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine going back to that state before the fall of all creation? That's what I think it means to be liberating all of creation from the forces of death. See that's why Paul says death is the last enemy. When death is defeated, wow, we're going to see a whole new universe.
But you
right.
you don't see that happening. You don't see that being facilitated by a big event, whether it be something cataclysmic or something divine, like, you know, because you were saying we don't know. I know that I've always taught that, you know, Jesus is going to come down on the clouds and there's trumpets and, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, but mm-hmm. I remember us talking about this at length in mm-hmm. previous. And so I'm just wondering what the creation, and that's here on earth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's odd.
Here's what I'm suggesting. When Christ died and rose again, mm-hmm. in effect, he defeated death. Right? Mm-hmm. So the reality is, Christ has already defeated death.
Right.
Himself. Now, Now all the rest of creation, all the rest of us, it will take time to, or that is, there'll be is a period in which that victory will become, it will be in appearance. He created, something happened in the reality, the essence, all right? Something happened in the heavens. Death was defeated. But life and creation didn't experience that itself. It's going to take a period of time in which each of us, as the sons of God, are going to be perfecting and growing in that reality into the place where it will culminate in the actual transition or transformation of our bodies. So let's say we keep speaking life and speaking life, speaking freedom, boom. One day, and here's where I differ with this Christ coming again. It's not him coming again. The full revealing of Christ, the parousia of Christ comes. Our bodies are changed totally. All that's immortal, all that's mortal will become immortal. That's the great day of the Lord. Now there's much, there's so much involved there. We just touch on that. And I don't know that I can fully explain or have the knowledge about it myself, but I just know that is the culmination. That's what, you know, it's commonly referred to as Jesus coming again in the rapture and all of that. We've pictured it wrongly. The picture is Christ, he's already in us. What's going to happen at that moment is that he's going to be fully revealed. We're going to be like him. What is he like? He's living in an immortal body. Remember, as he ascended, his body was imperishable. His body was glorious. It had nothing could hold that body. Nothing could prevent him from doing anything that it wanted to. That's what will happen as he comes and brings those, all of those that have died will be with him as he fully reveals himself in us. Both of us are caught up together in this great transformation of our losing our earthly finite bodies and acquire the new body.
Yeah. There were some people who were talking about this back in 2017, late 2017. Mm-hmm. And when there were some world, you know, events going on, and I was just like, man, what a bunch of kooks, you know, because it just seemed very new agey and very, but wow, maybe they were onto something.
I forget which chapter it is now. I've lost track, but there's one of the, I devote this idea to in one of the chapters of the book, and I think I released it, but if not, I'll try to send it back to you. What is God's ultimate plan?
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows? Now, I believe we do. I believe Romans 8, 18 through 20 is the plan.
Well, yeah,
you can read those to us or tell us that.
It's the unveiling of the sons of God. And we are right now, we're in this unveiling process. We are speaking life into darkness all in this period. And at one point, this that we're talking about as though it's not will become as though it as it is. We are Christ. Doesn't look that way. We're in plant form. It's called the transition church, the in between. We are in plant form, but the plant will produce seed. We're in the caterpillar stage. We're actually butterflies, but we look like caterpillars. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. But that caterpillar is actually a butterfly. And he's going through that chrysalis process and coming out as a butterfly. That's the glorious brand revealing. I mean, we're in that process now, and then it will be fully culminated as Christ fully reveals himself in the great transformation, in which our mortal bodies are changed into his and look like him, imperishable bodies. Go ahead, Arnold.
Oh, it came to me, you know, that's so wonderful, and yet all I have to do is my part right now, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't have to try to be something that I'm not or do something. It's just, okay, I just need to do my part and where I'm at.
just let God do his thing in you.
Yeah, yeah.
And every day, you got these little problems, you got these great challenges, whatever, but just let him, okay, God, do what you do. And I want to resemble your heart. I want to express your life, your love. I want to unveil you because you are me. I am you.
So is this concept kind of what sometimes people refer to as the emerging church or the emergent church or something like that?
Well, from what I understand that term meaning, the emerging church is more of a form or a style of doing church. Mm-hmm. Doing the institutional. No, this is what's called the manifestation of the sons of God. And not all Christians or Christianity will adhere to this. There's a lot of resistance to what they call manifest sons.
Yes, huge. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because it goes back to the idea that how you and Christ can be one. Mm-hmm. That's blasphemy. Mm-hmm. You declare yourself as God. And that's the very thing that sent Jesus to the cross. I and the Father are one. I and Jesus are one. Jesus as us.
Yeah, it just comes down to you just have to follow your heart and you have mm-hmm. to trust. Mm-hmm. And because there's so much mudslinging and finger pointing. Mm-hmm. Within the church, just like as in everything else, mm-hmm. That, you know, oh, these people are wrong. They're leading you astray. Don't fall for it. There's just, it's so, mm-hmm. it's.
Yeah. So I want to be careful how I say this, but I want to challenge you. Mm-hmm. Are you hearing truth for you? I mean, far be it for me to lead all of you guys astray.
No, I know. Well, I
this is not the Deerdorf cult. I'm sorry.
It is well with my soul, but
okay.
I do. And I do this with everything. I don't seek, I purposely seek out something that is not mm-hmm. a confirmation mm-hmm. bias. You know, like I will read and I will research something and, you know, it challenges my belief system,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but I learn more and more. And then oddly, I see how it all kind of fits together. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, test the spirit.
Yeah.
As John says, test the spirit. And if the spirit confirms and witnesses the truth, that's how we are to know. And it's how I felt all along, as I have dared to believe that Christ lives in me. And that he is my life, as the more and more I have dared to believe that and calling it as though it is, this whole truth has begun to open up. Mm-hmm.
I think this whole crew has pretty much got the idea of God in us, because Dennis, I've worked with you for 18 years, and we're obviously all giving you a second chance based on some of the stuff that you taught in the past. So,
yeah. We forgive you.
Thank you, guys. Thank
you. You go back to Genesis, and we got, you've got a very early picture of our oneness with God. And it's when it talks about how the husband and wife become one. Okay. So all of us here, because we have wives, we have God in us, and you know, if we're one with them, with our wives. I think that was an early picture of, it's not a relationship with Jesus and with God, it's a oneness. Because if I'm to be one with my wife, how can I be that if I'm not not one with Christ?
Sure, exactly.
You know, because that's the example for us to be at one, to be one with our wife.
Yeah, it's the closest human institution we have, or we know of, that illustrates the union of God and Christ, Christ with us. Yeah, marriage. Powerful.
It can be both.
So is that saying God's a female?
Hey, Dennis, you're not leading me astray. I wasn't Christian Science, but it was Ask Reading years ago.
Yeah.
And then I became a disciple of that. And then on to, institutional churches. I watched you from afar, the institutional church, your ministry. You did the Sunday service. You preached some Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
I was with a different pastor and got the layman of the year award, you know. But I was in a different institutional church on the other side of town. Elected to be on the board, and I was on a session over your church, but I've watched that transition, and then I went through 4 years of kind of pushing the institutional. We didn't participate, and eventually read that book, So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore, and that kind of was a stepping point. And you didn't lead me. You suggested the book. But I read it from my perspective, and then on to the present, where I love to go up to Rick Warren's church and sit there and listen to music, or some other big church, and be part of it. But you're not leading me astray someplace. I watched you transition. And I know I have too. So good news.
All right. Well, brothers and sisters, I think I need to put another comma in this, and we'll press on with what it means, what God is doing in us, bringing out the glory of the Father, and what we face this week is another opportunity, or the same opportunity. God keeps pressing us, perfecting us, because he's after something. He's after seeing himself. He wants to see himself in us. That's what it's all about. So with that, don't let a good crisis go to waste.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right, guys.
Everybody have a great week.
Thank you. See you on
Wednesday, 10 a.m., whoever wants to jump on.
Send us the link on that, Dennis.
I will. I'll be sending it out.
I can join for a little bit. I've got a 10:25 appointment. Yes.
Okay, good. All right. See you then.
Thank you,
Dennis. All right. Bye, buddy.